You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
We're getting the band back together, getting the boys who rock to rock again. We're getting the band back together, rocking the bits of the place that the members went. Some punks from the suburbs lit the sky with too much reverb. We're getting the band back together.
Hey everybody, it's Ken Davenport, and I wanted to say thank you for listening to the Producer's Perspective podcast. You're now listening to a special mini-series, the Producer's Perspective podcast, live from the pandemic. These are recordings directly from the Facebook Live series I started during the coronavirus pandemic, where every single night I interviewed a Broadway luminary and chatted about what they were going through, how they were dealing with it, and what they expected Broadway and theater to look like when it was all over. So join us for this very special episode of the Producer's Perspective podcast, live from the pandemic. We have a very special guest, someone that I'm very happy to not only call a peer, but also a friend. She is a Broadway veteran for over 20 years. I mentioned him in the introduction, but Legally Blonde, Elf, Wicked, Book of Mormon, here in the U.S., and the West End. In fact, one day I just bumped into her on the sidewalk in London, just walking down the street. And it was like, oh, hey, that's Brett. So let's bump into her now on the live stream. Please welcome as Brett, Gebra Mikel.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I forgot that we bumped into each other in London. That's right. Oh my God. That's so funny.
That goes down in history as one of the most like bizarro moments I've ever had in the world. Like I'm walking down the street and I literally see, I'm like, oh, hey. And then the freak out begins because you're seeing someone, 7,000 miles away from where you are. You spent a lot of time there.
I did. Right? Yeah. I was there. I did Dreamgirls there for almost 2 years. And then I was there for Book of Mormon in 2016. And I was there for 6 months.
Wow. So yeah. we're gonna talk about a lot of things tonight. But tell me just first, you worked on Broadway for a very long time and then you went to London. What are the differences for the scene for a performer? Did you enjoy it more? The social scene, everything about it. How did it differ from here?
Well, I mean, I loved it. That had been a dream of mine. And so the fact that I got to do it twice was insane. Getting to perform on a London stage was amazing. And so much fun to be doing those shows in particular.
So let's talk about how you got to London. Let's go start at the beginning. So tell me the origin story. So where did you first get bit by the theater bug? How did it happen for you?
Well, I always loved performing. As a little kid, I mean, I would make up songs and torture my younger sister into making her do these performances with me. But I think when I was 11 or 12, and I went to New York with a group from my dance studio, and we'd seen a bunch of shows. I remember seeing Andy Blankenbuehler in Guys and Dolls. I'd met him around the dance competition circuit. And I saw Vanessa Williams starring in Kiss of the Spider Woman. And we got to meet her afterwards. And I was like, there's a woman that looks like me who's front and center singing and dancing and acting. And she's wearing these incredible costumes and I can do that. I knew I loved to dance and I loved to sing, but I remember going home after that trip and writing down on paper, I'm going to go to New York University and I'm going to be on Broadway.
You were 11 or 12. You went home and you wrote it down on a piece of paper.
Yes. It was like a school project or something. And I only knew about NYU because of the Cosby Show, because Theo Huxtable went to NYU. So it's like, well, that obviously cool. That's where I'm going to go to school.
Of course. Theo is going to be there.
If Theo can do it, I can do it. Yeah, Theo's going to be there.
Theo could do it. You definitely could do it.
Exactly.
Actually, that's so funny because it brings up a very poignant point. You learned about NYU. NYU changed your life, right? Because of a television show,
yes.
Which is really, and Cosby Show aside for the moment, what we know now, but
right.
The arts or entertainment had a massive impact on you and your life, which is now having a massive impact on a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you how important the work that entertainers do and the entertainment industry does to change people's lives.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I can remember watching TV with my kids with my parents.
Well, I haven't seen you in a little bit of time.
No. Nothing new to report. God, that was weird. I remember watching as a kid with my parents, watching Saturday Night Live and watching these blooper shows and learning that I could do impressions. I mean, I couldn't really, but I started doing impressions of people and I just watched everything and absorbed it all. I loved comedy. I loved sitcoms. And, you know, obviously the Cosby Show had a huge effect in where I went to school.
And that's the other thing my first experience with you as a performer was not in any of these big Broadway shows.
Right.
It was in this small improv show called Don't Quit Your Night Job, which was a late night event. And I remember just like leaning forward and watching you totally commit to whatever crazy scene it was and thinking and hearing you were in the ensemble of a bunch of shows and thinking like, that's not an ensemble performer right there. That's different. So you went to NYU. How quickly did you get on Broadway? How quickly did that piece of paper dream come true?
Well, so I actually went to NYU to study communications because I told my parents that I wanted to be a performer. And they were like, that is great news. What are you studying in school?
What did they do?
Well, they're both retired now, but my mother was a nurse. She just recently retired, and my father is an electrical engineer. And in fact, they came over to America for education. So there was no way that I was going to, go off and start performing and not get a college degree.
How did you convince them? Because there's a lot of people, I'm sure, watching, a lot of young people watch this going, like, I'm going to have that conversation with my parents, like, next week. What did you say? What should they say?
I mean, I'm a crazy person. So what I said was, I'll go to school for something academic and just be in New York and take class and audition, which was like, I don't think they thought that my second semester of my freshman year, I would get my first Broadway show and that I would stay. Yeah. You don't know. That's funny. Yeah.
What year was this?
It's 99.
Okay.
It was Footloose.
I went to NYU, but...
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah, so I got an academic scholarship to NYU. I got a partial scholarship. I was admitted into the Martin Luther King Jr. Scholars Program. So I was to keep a 3.5 GPA every semester and do 30 hours of community service.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And so I said I was going to study communications. I was in the School of Ed, and it actually worked to my advantage because I didn't, I could still audition. And since I got a show, I could leave. I could do my classes and go. I think with the Tisch kids, they weren't allowed to audition, right? So I had auditioned for Footloose a few times before that. Mark Myers and I grew up together in the same dance studio, and he got the show. He got the workshop and then he moved to Broadway with the show. So he was the dance captain, and I had auditioned a few times, didn't get it. One Thursday afternoon, there was a last minute call for an immediate replacement. And that was it. It was like my fourth audition. I remember Walter Bobby and Doug Katsaros and everyone just so happy to see me again. I was just this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed kid, teenager, you know. And I remember at the end of the audition, you know, they asked if I could roller skate. And I was like, yes, of course I can. Couldn't. I was terrified. And they thanked me for coming in. And then 2 hours later, I got the call. So my entire second semester of my freshman year, I was going to school during the day and then going to the dressing room. I was a swing, so I covered 9 tracks. And when I wasn't on, I was upstairs studying or working on papers or...
Well, talk a little bit. I mean, you've auditioned for a lot of shows throughout your career.
Yes.
Any tips out there for performers who are in those moments and get nervous, or how do you show up and be you in those moments?
I think that it's important to remember why you're there, that you love it so much. And I think that being you, and sometimes that can put you in your head. But really just being yourself. And I think people just want to see your personality. I think, you know, they saw this kid coming in 3 and 4 times. And every time I just had this smile on my face. I was so excited. I was working really hard, you know, and I was persistent. I was persistent and I was friendly. And I think if it's clear that you love it, that's probably the biggest thing you can do.
Was it everything your 12-year-old heart and mind thought it would be? Like, what was it like when you were finally there and living it now and living the life? How did it exceed your expectations? How did it not?
I was kind of thrown into the fire by swinging 9 tracks. And in a show like Footloose, I went on for every single track. I even, you know, pushed scenery for some of the male tracks when we went down.
If you never played any of the boys.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a couple girlfriends, a couple Beaumont High School girlfriends as some of the male tracks in the show. So that was super exciting, and I didn't originate that show. It wasn't until years later when I was part of an original cast that I felt that excitement, which is a little bit different. But certainly the first time I went on and the first time I ever went on for Rusty and sang Let's Hear It for the Boy, I was completely terrified, you know. But you never forget that. You never forget those first moments. And so it exceeded my expectations. And I think there's always that excitement, you know, your first performance or the first preview or the invited dress, which is one of my favorites, and the sits pro. You know, I think that every experience that I've had has had one highlight.
I'll ask you one of my James Lipton questions.
Okay.
So of all the shows that you've performed in and all the roles you've performed in, if you could only take like one moment from your entire performing career and like freeze that moment and put it in the Smithsonian Institute to represent your favorite memory, what would it be?
Oh, okay. I have 2. Is that okay? Just 1. Damn it. Okay.
I'm wishing for more wishes. It's like,
I know. If I write it down, I'll get it. Then I would say singing, oh, baby, I got a show to do at the end of the rap in Dreamgirls. The whole rap and that particular moment, and then that just that fierce walk off stage.
And what was the other moment?
The line that I have at the end of the Book of Mormon in my original track, named Asmaret after me, where I say, "You don't think a man actually after frog, do you? That's effing stupid." When, like, our invited dress, I think just the laugh that I got after that.
And that was that your line? Did you say that? You came up with that?
No, no. What the F is a steak knife is the line I came up with. I actually did. That was another favorite moment of that show. I just said the F word a lot in Mormon. Yeah. That's basically, you know.
We'll see if the Smithsonian will allow that in.
Yeah.
We'll certainly allow it fucking here at the producer's perspective.
Oh, good, good, good. I was like, I don't know what I could say. Great, perfect. Because that's my favorite word, so.
So in the midst of everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks, a week or two ago now, I'm scrolling through my Instagram, and I see Josh Gad's Instagram, And I'm a fan of Josh, and I follow him. Yeah. I don't really watch all his videos. Don't tell him. He reads to kids sometimes. It's great. But your face and name popped up, and I was like, oh, it's Az. So I'm going to listen. And I did. And for those of you who haven't seen this video, I urge you to watch it. There's Mary will throw up. It's such a great shot there.
I love
Mary
it.
We'll throw up the link to it in our chat. It's been viewed like almost 100,000 times now. It's an incredible video. And part of it is this, because of this image, there's friendship and joy and laughter and tears and authentic truth. And the line that really woke me up a bit and slapped me in the face was you saying you were tired and too tired. And it just really grabbed me in many, many places, my heart, my head, everywhere. And I really leaned into that Instagram and listened. And it was really the beginning for me. And I want to thank you for that. And also it was shortly thereafter that I noticed these pop up on Instagram. Like, wow. Let's show these.
Yes.
If you can figure out how to make banana bread, you can find James Baldwin. And if you can grow basil in your kitchen now, you can Google Toni Morrison. And this is what has so, I think I've probably always been taken by you since that very first Don't Quit Your Night Job experience I had, like somehow leaning in and saying this person is special, because there's such a combination of education and activism and irony and a little humor and all of that in those quotes. And they work. Like, that's what's amazing, is that they work and are so powerful. I leaned in again. I want you to know that I Googled like right away. I learned because, of course, Toni Morrison. Wow. Toni Morrison was my, I do these whiteboard quotes in the morning. She was my quote this morning. It just was such a successful moment of, again, education and activism and inspiration. Tell me what motivated you to say, where did you come up
with? You know, after the conversation with Josh, and he had called me that morning, and we were just talking about everything that's going on. And you know, I'd had a hard few days before our conversation. And then, you know, upon speaking with other Black people, they were having a hard time too. Like there was a day where I stayed in bed, you know, I was just tired from seeing all this footage of people being killed and reading George Floyd's last words, you know, and we had just gone through Ahmaud Arbery a few months prior to that. So it just felt so draining on top of the fact that we're dealing with this global pandemic. So Josh and I got on the phone, and he was saying, you know, if there's anything I can do, I'd love to use my platform to really, you know, share your story and amplify your voice. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, like coffee. I'm like, we'll do this sometime, you know? And I started saying, I made this point about being tired. I said, you know, because people were reaching out and saying, let me know what I can do. And let me know if there's anything I can read, you know, to learn more about this. And I said, Josh, we're tired. As a people, Black people are tired of you know, being asked this. And so that was actually the impetus for him to want to go live that day. He's like, do you want to just go live? And I was like, yeah, I guess. I didn't think anyone would care to hear what I had to say. I didn't know what I was going to say. But because Josh and I are such good friends and I felt so comfortable with him, you were able to see the humor and the vulnerability and the candor. You know, I don't remember half the stuff that I said, which is probably for the best. But it was after that that I was just watching all of these people post these things and watering their plants and making all this bread. And, you know, I thought we were done eating bread. Also, I thought, like, you know, we were a protein society. And then everyone's making bread during the pandemic. And so I was doing a post on my Instagram feed, and that's where I came up with it. I was just trying to post this conversation. And so it was just sort of an addendum. I said, there are plenty of resources. If you can figure out how to make banana bread, you can easily find James Baldwin or whatever. And I got off the phone, and Nika Lanzarone had texted me the meme. She had already made it. She works that fast. I was like, oh my God. Because, you know, and then I was seeing, and then the Basil thing I came up with later when I was talking to Ingrid Michaelson, who's a good friend of mine, and I had sent her the banana bread quote as well. Because I think Black people are tired. We're dealing with the trauma on our own, and racism is not a trend. So this information has been around for years. We've been experiencing these emotions for years, and you know, it's like now it's on you to do the work. You do it. You read the books. You watch the documentaries. You know, if you can learn these like Megan Thee Stallion dances on TikTok, you got time to.
Yeah, it's that thing of, you know, I talk about this a lot in people who want to write scripts or do anything. If you want something bad enough, you will go, you will take action and do it.
Yeah.
And that's what, of course, because that was my first reaction too, just like Josh, and I'm sure like a lot of like, oh, I want to find out what I can do. Let me act. And
yeah.
If I want something in my life, if I want it badly enough, I just sit down and do it.
Right.
And that's what obviously you're reminding us. And it just hit home for me.
Yeah.
I think
this is the artist scholar kid, you know, this is the performing arts kid who went to NYU. I feel like the memes are sort of, they're my voice, you know, they reflect all of my background. You know, the nerdy kid and the kid that, you know, watched The Cosby Show. I got to stop mentioning The Cosby Show. I got to think of
something. You're actually helping the brand a little bit. At least it's a little
inspirational or something.
So after Josh, then you wrote an op-ed for Broadway News, which is another powerful piece. We have that. So how did this come about? Did they reach out to you? Tell us a little bit about this.
I was approached by a friend of mine who had been approached by the editor in chief over at Broadway News. It was, I guess the conversation I had with Josh was on a Tuesday. And then on Wednesday morning, my friend reached out to me and said, "Hey, there's this opportunity. Are you interested in telling your story?" And so I panicked first, and then I said, "Yes, I'll do it." And I had no idea what I was going to talk about. You know, I had watched Matthews' video, and my friend Cody Richard had written a post on Facebook. My friend Warren Adams, you know, I was seeing friends of mine speak out and being really vulnerable and really honest. And I had been ruminating over some things, but I didn't know exactly what I wanted to say. So I refrained from saying anything for a while. And then this opportunity came up, and I remember I said yes, I hung up the phone and I worked out. And I tend to get thoughts when I'm either on the subway or exercising or something. And so I was like doing whatever, you know, burpees or whatever I was doing. And it started to come to me. You know, it's like, what is my perspective? I've been the token all of my life, growing up, you know, at my dance studio, amongst my circles of friends, in the musical theater community. What is, you know, what do I want to say? And so it just started to come together. And that was Wednesday. I wrote a draft on Wednesday afternoon. And then it was turned around Thursday. I edited Thursday, and it was out Thursday afternoon. It's the fastest thing I've ever written in my entire life.
Wow.
But I think I had just been sitting on years of experience. And then once you start thinking about those things, then they just start to keep coming, you know? Even after I finished, there was stuff that I thought about that happened, in London even, you know? You just start thinking and... Yeah, it just came out of me.
What I love, I have to just mention this again. You yes and did Broadway News. It's amazing. I mean, it seems like fun, but you have, this is what you do, and it is pushing you forward and very important. You're presented with an opportunity and you're just taking it, and it's good for you. It's good for a lot of people in the world right now because this message is getting out there. Yesterday, all of a sudden, a Forbes article pops out. But you also said you panicked, and you also said you were a little nervous before Josh. Where do you think you summoned up this courage to do this? These are very courageous. These are big things you're saying. You are a performer in the industry who is going to be looking for a job in the next several years. Like, talk a little bit about why the courage, or how the courage came about now.
They say courage is having the fear and doing it anyway, right? So I think that for me, it's always a split second decision of weighing whether this fear is just a fear of being vulnerable and of being that exposed, or is it something that just does not feel right? I think that's something that I've cultivated, especially in the last few years. As you work in the business more and more, and you are offered things, and most of the time it's timing or if you're offered a job and you're so used to saying yes to things that you do, or you say yes to an audition and you go into this audition and you didn't really want to say yes, but you said yes anyway out of fear, then that doesn't go well either. So I think in those instances with having the talk with Josh and with writing this article, with writing this piece, I sat with it for a minute and not very long, because I the turnaround was super quick, but I think I've gotten really good at knowing intuitively if something is going to benefit me or if it could benefit someone else. And I think certainly with both of those instances, I felt like if I can inspire one other person to speak out, then it's been successful.
And now that those have been out for a little bit, how are you? And there is a big Forbes article about you, which is fantastic, and we'll throw that up in the comments as well. How are you feeling with all of this?
I'm overwhelmed. That Josh and I spoke, and the day that the article came out, I was overwhelmed by the response and the support. And even as time has gone on, it's reaching so many people, because of people like Josh and people like you and friends of mine who are supporters. I've felt so supported and so encouraged to keep speaking out. I've gotten messages from people in the business and not in the business who have thanked me for my perspective, because really, Josh and I touched on this in our conversation, but you could fill that blank in with any profession. It's not just the performing arts. So I think that what I've learned, and it's something that but you sometimes it's worth repeating, is that there's such universal themes. I think that's why shows work, because if you're touching on a universal theme, it's going to touch more people than you realize.
How much do you feel theater and arts will play a role in the changes needed in this country and the world over the next couple of decades?
Well, I think that people as a collective are listening now. I don't know what's going to happen with the government. I am hopeful that in the microcosm of theater and the arts, that people will start to listen and people will start to implement the change and broaden the idea of diversity and representation to the article, the theater makers. I think people look to the arts for that kind of inspiration, but I think it needs to happen in society, it needs to start from the top, I'm hopeful. I really am hopeful, just based on the conversations that I've heard, and even I went to the Broadway Advocacy Coalition Forum as well. Just seeing the number of people there, I was inspired, you know. But as a lot of people are saying, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I don't expect to see drastic change overnight. And I hope that it's not drastic. I think that for it to be long lasting, I think, you know, things like this, conversations, I think the conversations are important. And I'm seeing, it feels different. It feels like people are actively listening.
Well, I know many people are, and frankly, that's because of you and a lot of the work that you've done. Just so you know, I can tell you that I have heard your name and these articles and videos in more Zoom rooms around the industry over the last several week or so. So I'm so grateful for that. Because wow. I'm so grateful you yes-anded me tonight and came on. And that you yes-anded all these opportunities and experience. You didn't need to do any of this. You didn't need to go live with Josh. You didn't need to write that article. And you did. And I personally am so thankful. And I know there are a lot of people that are so grateful for all the work that you're doing right now.
That means a lot, Ken. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being here and sharing your stories with us.
Yes. Oh, can I just add one thing?
Yes, of course.
The charity that I was going to do. Just really quickly, because, you know, I mentioned that, there were days and there are a lot of people who are having a hard time, you know, and self-care is very important. And I'm a huge proponent of therapy. And, you know, we not only lost George Floyd, but Breonna Taylor was killed in her home while she was asleep. And her killers still haven't been arrested. And I think that as a group, women, Black women, may not feel as valued. You know, I think that can play on your mind, and that can mess with your psyche. So I just want to say that I would like to point out the Loveland Foundation, which was started by Rachel Cargill, who's been very popular on social media, very smart woman. And this organization raises money so that Black girls and women all across the country can get therapy for free. I just think there's a stigma in the Black community around getting help and mental illness and therapy. And so I think this organization is really important. If you can donate, that would be amazing. But I just think spreading the awareness and, you know, sharing posts on social media is one way you can help. But I feel very, very strongly about that organization. So I just wanted to say that before I left.
No, I'm so glad you did. Talk about. I will certainly make a donation myself. I will urge everyone out there to make a donation as well. It's certainly something we should all do right now. And it's a great, you know, we're focused. There's so many areas that need attention and love and support. And this is one, I think you're right, gets overlooked.
Yeah.
Self-care is so important right now. Thank you again so much for everything
you've done. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I hope to bump into you on a sidewalk in this country or London.
Me too. I know. Yes, we'll make it happen. We'll bump into each other on purpose.
That's exactly. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Asmerette Gavra-McCall, everybody. Thanks again for listening to this very special episode of the Producer's Perspective podcast live from the pandemic. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, do us a favor and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And hey, while you're at it, leave us a big standing ovation review, will you? And check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/KenDavenport for more live stream interviews just like this one. Except on the Facebook page, you can actually see our faces. So check it out at facebook.com/KenDavenport. We'll see you there.
We're getting the band back together.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.